Hey everybody, welcome back to Arcade Cozy, the coziest game room on the internet. My name is Chris.
My name is Corey.
And we are coming back again. Corey.
Again.
It's a loop. It's not a spiral. It is an actual loop. Yes. We're doing this again, because, as Chris does sometimes, I forgot to hit record. We started talking about this and then, now we're starting it over again, and that's fine.
We only got 9 minutes in.
Yeah, it was only a few minutes. Everybody, I'm just going to rush through the introduction because you know why you're here. This is, Alan Wake. Two spoiler cast. If you've never been to one of these before, it's going to be all Alan Wake all the time here. If you've played Alan Wake 2, then strap in. This is going to be great. This is going to be exactly up your alley. If you haven't, maybe don't listen to it yet. Maybe save it. Send it to yourself. Enjoy it in the future. For now, this episode is only for people who have been spoiled or want to be spoiled on Alan Wake 2. Corey, take it away. Alan Wake. you just finished Alan Wake 2 last night. It's very fresh on your mind. Which is partially why it's such a here it is. We're doing it. When we've had games like Elden Ring and Final Fantasy 16 just kind of sitting on the back burner for a long time to have some sort of discussions about. Why is that, Corey? Why is this such a revelation to you? And why are you brimming with dark presence trying to let the world hear it?
I think between this is a little different than how we did it. Just how the loops are just a little bit different in Alan Wake 2. I think with Elden Ring, the experiences are so vastly different. I think it's, everyone's going to play it very differently. Everyone's going to do different bosses. Everyone's going to go through it differently. And so it's difficult to talk about because it's fun to share different experiences, but there's just so much happening there. I think Final Fantasy 16, I wouldn't mind doing that. We're a little late on that ball game, but it's like Alan Wake 2, it's all the same experience. It's these massive, massive kaiju fights that are just jaw-dropping, pushing the boundary of like how epic can a fight be. I think moving into Alan Wake 2, I think the main reason why I feel so compelled to text you immediately, like, we have to do it. Do you want to do it tomorrow? Kind of a thing, is because I thought the ending is masterfully done. I think the game is so important. It's so incredible what Remedy has done with it. And the actors, the story, the gameplay, all of it, I thought is just so special. And I think really how the game ends on such a very satisfying, very earned note just left me like awestruck by it. I know for a lot of this, seeing it on like Game of the Year list feels very deserved compared to like comparing it to a Baldur's Gate 3 and a Tears of the Kingdom, how we talked about last week. Having finished Alan Wake 2, I'm like, it belongs on that podium with them, especially with how it ends. And I want to go into this comparison. We were talking about it when we were recording, or not recording, sorry, before.
When we were just talking. My bad.
When we were just talking, I was describing like writing styles and how Alan Wake, I think noticeably in Alan Wake 1 is a really bad writer. And I think in Alan Wake 2, he's grown significantly because he's had to. He's also had 13 years of practice. But I was comparing the stories and the writing styles to a book I'm reading right now, Way of Kings by Brandon Sanderson. Thick book. So many pages. So much is happening. But I've read Mistborn. I've read the final three books to The Wheel of Time, which is what he wrote. And he writes massive, epic battle pieces incredibly well. All of his books are leading up to these massive set pieces effectively. And he writes them... he writes them almost like how a movie battle scene like plays out in perfection. Some people don't like it. Some people do like it. But the majority of what a lot of people don't like is throughout his books, the build up to him, you can see exactly what's going to happen. You know how this character is going to be. You understand what his powers are or her powers are. And like, you understand that they are special and X, Y, Z. And everything that is foreshadowed, you know, with near 99% certainty, like, this is what's going to happen. It's going to be so cool. I'm so excited to read about it. Like reading through this, the main character, Kaladin, I'm very, very confident of what his deal is, so to speak, in terms of his, I don't want to spoil it for people who are maybe not picking up what I'm picking up, but they probably are, but like what his deal is and it all. I'm like, okay, here's what's going to happen. It's going to be sick. I'm excited for it. It's a slow burn. And I think comparing that with Remedy's writing and Alan Wake's writing in Alan Wake 2 is all the foreshadowing. It gives you these small little bite-sized pieces that you kind of cling on to and build theories as the game is progressing. Full spoilers territory now. If you've waited this long and you're like, oh, they haven't spoiled anything yet, you should leave now because I'm about to spoil the game. I was texting you, and my big theory in the game was like, okay, Alan is Scratch. Scratch is Alan. These are the same. This is the same person. And what's going on? They both escaped. They had to escape at the exact same time. And I felt good about that theory, but it wasn't as reading some books where you're like, okay, this is what's happening. It's a, okay, but I'm playing as Alan in the dark place. And so was it just Scratch that got out? And there's multiple like instances and sequences and during the game where I'm like, I think it's just Scratch that got out. I don't think Alan has made it out of the dark place. And it's hinted multiple times as you're playing with Alan that, you know, he did not make it out of the dark place. Mr. Door is taunting him. He's teasing him.
Yeah.
Mr. Door is a interesting figure throughout the game. We'll get into him in a bit for sure. Mm-hmm. But there's also Sheriff Breaker Baker, who's also with you during this, and he was teleported to the dark place before you find Alan. But Alan's running into him almost immediately and constantly, and as you're progressing through, you're like, okay, clearly me playing as Alan has passed back past the time of when Alan has made it, or Scratch has made it into the real world, and so on and so forth. And you're looking, and as the game slowly just unwinds, a lot of theories I had were right, and a lot of them were really wrong too. But as it's revealed, I'm like, that's earned. I just missed it. Like, I overlooked the plot.
Yeah.
And similar to how near where Saga's story is kind of wrapping up, where she's having a lot of doubts. She's like, how did I miss this? Like, clearly I've made mistakes. And as the player, along with Saga, you're like, oh, I did miss that. I was wrong there. Like, clearly, like, something, I missed something here. And I think the game lands on its feet so well. Everything it's doing feels earned. It feels deserved. As Alan speaks throughout the game, he has to finish, quote unquote, return. And it has to be the perfect ending, because you have to take all the pieces that have been set up throughout, and it has to, the ending needs to fit that. It needs to feel deserved. You can't feel cheap or Deus Ex Machina. It needs to be, ultimately, at the end of the day, like, your audience needs to feel like, yes, that is what I wanted. Or you don't want them walking away like, oh, that's how it ends. And I think Alan Wake 2 had me feeling like, that's what I wanted. That's perfect. They nailed it.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
I love it. It's so good. And so that's how, those are my initial thoughts. We're going to get into it all.
Yeah. Well, and I think that's, it's something that is easy to miss about Alan Wake 1 and 2 to an extent, is like, in a similar vein to like Twin Peaks for something, where it's so surreal, it's almost kind of like throwing you off the scent. Like it's almost kind of there to, like, yeah, they're trying to tell this they're trying to, you know, make the world feel otherworldly and do all these kind of things and whatever. But like, at the same time, they are like using those as opportunities to distract you and pull you away and say, hey, look over here, while they make like very typically concrete decisions. Because, yeah, Alan Wake and Alan Wake 2, I mean, they tell these very, truth be told, like pretty concrete stories. Mm-hmm. Where it is, I mean, at its core, like Alan Wake 2 being Saga's investigating this murder, and it's really just there are people, you know, well-meaning people in town who are, you know, taking mm-hmm. it upon themselves to protect their town, and they're kind of at the core of this, and it's looping in with Alan's whole story of trying to continue to escape this dark presence that's trying to escape. You know, I mean, it's this very like, and Alan Wake was the same way, where it's this story of the dark presence trying to be written into reality. And it is kind of like a simple elevator pitch to be able to kind of present it that way, but because of all of the looping threads, because of Alan's stories in particular, where you're seeing a lot of this otherworldly stuff, it does start to kind of like creep in, where it's like, man, do I really know what's going on? And mm-hmm. yeah, you do, because like they are telling a good, strong, coherent story that sets itself, I mean, in my opinion, like sets itself up well, and follows through incredibly well. And is a lot of the reason why I think like the original Alan Wake stuck with me as like, this is a game that like is one of my favorite games, because it was like, it wasn't just, it was telling a very just good story. Like mm-hmm. it told a very interesting, effective story, even if like I wasn't really into horror or the combat wasn't great. Like it was still telling this very compelling story with a lot of these threads. It was keeping you engaged enough throughout the way, without it being this like overly complicated kind of thing. Even if you do kind of get to the end of it and you're like, what in the world is happening? Mm-hmm. Like what's going on? And Alan Wake 2 is the same way. Like, I mean, they leave things up in the air, but whenever you do start to kind of break it down and start to kind of like understand and bring the stuff together, it is again telling a pretty concise story. Mm-hmm. It is telling like a very A to B simple kind of struggle of what's going on. And I think it is impressive that they're able to kind of take so much, they're able to really broaden that out and make such an incredible, just like broad sweeping kind of thing. It's a really like mm-hmm. Super cool, really interesting just how much they're like able to kind of like expound upon everything that's going on.
Yeah, and I agree. I think last week I described it as they take a massive swing, and they definitely hit a home run with this. The extent of their storytelling and how much everything comes back together. And I really think of Alan's plot line really through, because we joked at the beginning, I was like, oh, it's a loop. And you're like, it's not a spiral. And it is a spiral, fun fact. But seeing how his story, specifically within the writer's room, plays out over and over and kind of over again, but it's like the story is taking place in different spots in time. It's, you know, time, I think it's meaningless in the dark place is how it's described, but seeing how everything fits so neatly together in such a chaotic yet organized way of, it's Alan who's actually haunting his ex-wife, trying to find out his way back from the dark place. It's him coming to this false realization and believing that he is stumbling upon Scratch, writing Return, when it's shown clearly before that it's him who found Return is trying to fix it, and he's constantly making the same mistake over and over again. to which, again, Mr. Door points out. I think that was one of my, to get a little tangent here, one of my favorite interactions.
Well, and before you...
Go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, well, what I wanted to say before we tangent too much, let me at least, like, try to, for people that may be kind of, like, just somewhat...
So confused.
Like, confused about the whole arc of things, let me try to kind of sum things up. Corey, you...
Sorry.
You pipe in with...
I'm a little everywhere with it because the game's a little everywhere.
No. Yeah, I mean, I figure we can have that as a nice baseline to be able to go forward.
Yes.
But yeah, I mean, like, that is one of the core mysteries. Like, Saga's story is very straightforward. Like, weird stuff happens.
It's pretty cut and dry.
But it's very straightforward. Right. She's following these threads. She's learning more about what's happening in Brightfall. She's learning more about this cult. All of this is just kind of happening around her. It's really Alan's story that is the most confusing. And really what you get at the end is this realization, because throughout Alan's entire story, he's doing this stuff in his mind to escape the dark place and to escape Scratch and to finally, like, finish this novel that allows him to do that. But there are all of these moments where that slip in, where it's like, okay, like, Alice is being haunted by Scratch. You're coming in to her apartment and getting photographed just like Scratch was. And you're, like, you are sitting down to write, and then Scratch pops in and he shoots you in the head. And then, like, then you come around and you see Scratch going in to go shoot out, like, go look for, like, you're seeing all of this stuff, like, just all of these scenes play out differently in different areas. And you start to, like, by the end, you learn, oh, everything that Alan's been doing, it has been a loop. Not just, and not just a loop, but a loop that he's been doing for a very long time. Like, he has actively been haunting Alice for a long time in an effort to reach out to her. He's been trying to escape all this time, only to be stopped right at the last minute from Scratch. And you see all of these things, like, kind of folding in on top of themselves until you get a lot of Saga's involvement, a lot of these things in the story where, you know, combination Saga, combination Alice, who's revealed at the end to, because it's previously believed kind of toward the end of the game that she commits suicide. Like, it's found out at the end that she doesn't, that she had additional shout out to Control fans. There's mention to her heading to the oldest house, which is also referenced in the Control AWE DLC. So it's that scene, that overlap of her going to do that. And it's her actively kind of, like, breaking free of that. Like, her, you know, effectively breaking the loop. Her, you know, quote unquote, killing herself to stop the haunting so that she can kind of take this into her own hands and find a way to finally reach Alan and allow him to break it and break his loop of, like, violence to, in her words, ascend, which then leads Alan, which, I mean, doesn't cover, like, what happens at the end of the game, but Alan's whole, like, final line, it's not a loop, it's a spiral, being this, like, oh, it's broken. Like, it's not this, like, circular thing. It's actually, like, a semi loop that has the potential to spiral upward or downward. And so it's a weird thing to kind of, like, try to wrap your head around, but it is this whole, like, did I miss anything, Corey? I mean, it's a, like, that, those feel like kind of the broad strokes. It's like, that is the big thing that you're wondering the entire time is, like, what exactly is the timeline of Alan's story? And the reality is, like, Alan's story is just kind of happening. Like the stuff that you're playing through is like, it is kind of out of time. You know, his communications with Saga and stuff. I mean, there's a like, you know, you texted me pretty early on and said like, oh yeah, I think Alan is Scratch, or not that necessarily, but that Scratch like was the one that made it out. And
yeah,
and I honestly like thought a similar thing early on too, because there is like an interaction that is kind of like brushed off as, oh, I'm talking to Alan from the past. And I was like, but what if you aren't? Like, what if that is Alan just like in the present reaching out and he's still there? And so, yeah, it is a there. All of that stuff starts to fold back and you start to really like, they give you answers for those things. But I feel like the biggest unanswered stuff is like, man, really, what in the world was happening? Like, and that feels like kind of the big broad strokes is that Alan's entire time, these 13 years, were just effectively a loop, which you do kind of get like some hints to in some of the Alan Wake DLC, and also kind of like looking at Thomas Zane, because Thomas Zane had been there for decades prior and his entire life had been a loop. And, you know, watching and effectively like just understanding it is a, you know, this is a space where creators are meant to just psychotically create for all of eternity. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it, that being effectively the function that Alan's trying to break out of. So
no, I think you nailed it there. And I think there's a lot of real world, sorry, in terms of story, I don't think you missed anything. I'm trying to think. No, that's pretty much it. I mean, it's I think it's also implied that in the, like, Alan's gone for 13 years, but Alan could have been within the dark place for thousands of years. This loop could have, this loop has happened in infinite amount of times, and he seems to have finally broken it at this point, at the end of Alan Wake 2. I'm trying to, I don't think story-wise we've missed much, so I'd rather get into kind of like, what did we, what were our favorite parts of the game? Are there things we didn't like? What are our thoughts on like Mr. Door and Sheriff Breaker, and what this means for Control 2, Alan Wake 3, things like that. So yeah, what was your favorite? Well, I guess, did you enjoy Old Guards of Asgard's performance of Dark Ocean Summoning? Or did you prefer more Herald of Darkness?
Now, which one is the Herald of Darkness? Is that the...
That's the chapter four, as you are like working your way through like all
that,
these old
sets.
Okay,
so the actual,
the musical
big,
number.
The big musical number. You know, I mean, that is the standout scene. Like, that's, that whole sequence is very, is obviously like the scene that people are gonna be like, oh man, like watching all of these characters break into song and dance while you are in telling the story, while you're fighting off all of these characters and you're running through and stuff. Like, it's a very it is one of those things that's like, man, games are like, are magic. The fact that like I'm playing in this world and watching these real life actors just like playing this out is unreal. I will say though, the oceans, like the summoning number, is very underrated. Like,
I agree.
The fact that like, and I think it's because of the way that it's set up, like them being down there, them like, I mean, really that whole sequence where you're going down to Cauldron Lake and they're ripping through the woods and they're, you know, you're just kind of making your way in the rubble behind them. And they're like, they're jazzed up to finally be back at it again. And they are playing this music that like goes hard while you're like frantically fighting off all these enemies. Like, it is a, the fact, like, they really control is whenever they, like, to my knowledge, whenever they started dialing that in with, like, the ashtray maze.
Oh,
but
still
I,
so good.
I hope every Remedy game digs into that in some capacity. Because I think that they really do understand how to, like, really, like, dial in that emotion. Like, get in there and just be like, yeah, we're gonna go at this sequence super hard. And whether it's just like, whether it's a really over the top thing or it's just there's music in the background that is gonna, like, kick ass while you are kicking ass. Yeah. And we're just gonna, like, make this, like, a big to do. Like, I think it was, both of those sequences were phenomenal. But yeah, I mean, obviously, like, the just the set piece of it, watching the performance of everything, I think is the standout scene from the entire game, more than likely.
I agree. I do think Dark Ocean Summoning is probably underrated based on what I've just read on Reddit and stuff, but Herald of Darkness, that musical number where you are working through, like, all these, like, odd backstage props, and they're, like, pointing you in the direction you need to go, and there's all these different signs where you have to follow them in order. And I think it takes a game that is very horrific, very tense, very just, like, has your skin crawling at times. And in that moment, it just breaks all of it. And it's like, we're going to have fun. We want you to have a little bit of fun in this game with nothing to worry about. Everything's bright. There's light everywhere. The Taken are here, but you can see them. You also have a flare gun getting, like, infinite ammo during this whole sequence as well. And it's meant to just be like, hey, take a deep breath. Let's have a little fun here for a bit. Let's just enjoy it all. And we'll get, you know, we'll get back to the meat of it later. We're gonna scare you more. You're gonna be uncomfortable later, but for now, we're gonna have so much fun. And yeah, I think it's one of the best sequences I've ever played. It just had me smiling. It let me breathe, and it's so good. If you haven't played Alan Wake 2 and you've just been listening to us talk spoilers on it, you're not gonna play it. Just pull up Herald of Darkness on YouTube. They have a video of it. I've watched it. It's like 9 minutes long.
It is a long song. It is a very prog rock, like, thing.
Yeah. It is just the musical number. It doesn't have all of the breaks or guitar riffs and all that, like, in between while you're doing combat or, like, working your way through the environment. It is just a 9 minute song. And it rips. Gosh, it was so good. I think a good segue to that is Mr. Door is kind of the center of Herald of Darkness. What do you think is going on with Mr. Door? And so Mr. Door in the game, for people who want to know, I'm just going to give some background before we get into that. He is the talk show host and the beginning of each of Alan's chapters. And so each character has 9 chapters. Alan finds himself in his makeup room, I guess is the way to word it, or like his changing room.
Green
room, where he's waiting to go on to the talk show. Yeah. And then you walk up to the TV and you focus in on the TV and it goes and jumps to the real world acting of where Alan is on this talk show. Was it in the door with Mr. Door or into the door with Mr. Door or something like that? Can't remember exactly. Where, you know, this guy, I can't remember the actor's name. I've seen him in a lot of things. He basically, like, Alan, we're here to talk about your new book. And Alan's like, book? I haven't written a book. And he was like, oh, stop playing with us. And it's like this big, like, jumped up skit, effectively, where he is just, like, effectively messing with Alan is what it's revealed to be.
Yeah.
But he's just asking him all these questions. Sam Lake, a.k.a. Alex Casey, a.k.a. Max Payne, a.k.a. the director of the entire game, is also there half the time where he's just like, yeah, I'm playing Alex Casey. And like, what do you think? He was like, I don't really like the adaptations. You know, it doesn't really take my work into effect. And they're like, oh, well, that's, you know, that's sad. But here's your new book. Come on. He's like, I didn't write this. And it's a lot of these different things. But Mr. Door seems to have some influence he's not the Dark Presence. I don't think he could be. But he is a big player in the aspect of this. Yep. And a little bit before, when we go into it, I think one of my favorite sequences is where it's called Mask, where Mr. Door drops his mask. And he's like, all right, Alan, let's be real for a bit. You know, we've done this a lot of times. This might be the last time. I don't know if you're coming back, regardless if you get out of this loop or not. So let's just be real. I have people I'm trying to protect. I'm going to do what I have to do. So you need to do what you have to do. I'm like, it was a kind of a, I didn't know if the game was going to do that, because I felt like Mr. Door was like punking me the entire time. And when it revealed he was, I'm like, oh, this is scarier now that I know he has, because he's been dictating events. And so I just want to get your thoughts on, like, who do you think Mr. Door is? What do you think is going on with him? Did you like him in this or not? Because I loved just like the reveal that, oh, he is a puppet master.
Yeah. So my thoughts kind of broaden beyond just the game. So if you want to, like, if after I talk, if you want to rein it back in to like more Door specific stuff, 100% feel free. My big thing with Mr. Door, I mean, the couple of things that stand out, like the obvious stuff being there's like strong allusions to the fact that like he is Saga's father. Like there's a lot there to kind of like to make you feel, because I mean, Saga, like the entire story, you're learning that, like, you know, Saga and her mom left, you know, moved out to be with the, or at least in like this reality that's being written, like they moved out, they lived with their her dad and brother, being, you know, being Odin and Tor, and they're being out in Bright Falls and Watery in that area. And then, you know, her dad was like just not a great man, and there were, you know, they needed to get away. But there's a lot of like, it continues to be a reference thing. Like, it would be one thing if it was just like, oh, this is who I am, this is something that has impacted me. But there, for one, there is just a lot of hang up on the fact that, like, it feels like with how much they are talking about her dad, that they are either going to like reveal her dad, or effectively you already know who her dad is, is kind of the way that it's being set up. Because it's like, I mean, really, at this point, like, you're talking about him so much. it's got to be a bigger deal than him just being gone. And there, you know, this wasn't stuff that I caught while I was playing, but like going back and looking at some analysis, like, you know, there's subtle mentions where it's like, oh, whenever you're doing your in the head interrogation of like your grandfather, they mention like, when referencing like her dad, it's like some doors are better left closed, like some sort of like door related language he's using, and talks about him like disappearing on just this night and never being seen again, and it happens to be like the same year that, or like he went missing this year, and it was he was supposedly like vanished in a lightning flash, and it was also the same time potentially that they got in a fight where also like her grandfather lost his eye.
Yeah.
And they're like strongly, you know, they're tied to like Norse mythology and like lightning and things like that. And so like there's kind of hinting at those things. And there's also just a lot of language of like, you know, Door himself talking about, oh, I, you know, somebody important to me's been, you know, is a part of the story, and these kind of things. Door to me, though, like, I think represents Remedy's like bigger narrative for their universe, mm-hmm. because it is a thing where there is. So it was one of the things that I was not 100% sure on going into Alan Wake 2. Like, were they going to, was it going to be a lot of like overt stuff? Like, was Jesse Faden going to show up from Control? Were all of these characters from all of these games going to start bleeding together? And the answer being kind of, but no. Like, Ati from Control, the, you know, kind of metaphysical janitor, he's, you know, he's playing a role, he's showing up. But then you're also getting like Tim Breaker, who is an actor who was in a different Remedy game, but is not playing the same character. And there is like this kind of thing that's like, there's got to be something there. Like, this can't just be like a coincidence that they would pull him in. And you start like, as you're going through the game and you're seeing like, I mean, Tim's story in general, like, he doesn't have like a full complete narrative. He gets pulled out earlier in the game, and then you're just kind of like running into him in Alan's world, but you can kind of like read his whiteboard scribblings, and there are a lot of notes and there are a lot of comments in his, you know, in his whole thing about like, you know, there's sometimes where like I wake up and I'm a different person, and mm-hmm. I have a different name, and I'm living in a different world. And it kind of like hints to this idea of like there being kind of like a multiverse where like, yeah, Tim Breaker is the character from Quantum Break. It's just that isn't him here. Like in Alan Wake Land, it's not, but it's connected. And there are also callbacks to like in one of the, I remember I did find this and I remember seeing it and being like, what? On one of his whiteboard writings, he specifically talks about a redheaded woman and calls out like, you know, in referencing like more than likely Jesse from Control, who is redheaded. And there is a like thing being like, I know her, but I don't know from where. And it feels like I knew her somewhere, but not here. And it potentially being referenced to the fact that Jesse Faden's actress also was in Quantum Break, which was the game that Tim Breaker's actor was also in. And like this idea of being like, yeah, he does, his other version does know Jesse Faden's other version too. And so it, like, to me, Mr. Door, like, seems, he doesn't seem like he is a central part of Alan's narrative. Like, I don't think his, I think if he is an antagonist of any sort, he is like, he is an antagonist of a greater like Remedy connected universe, kind of like a kind of a Kang that MCU's had kind of going on, where it is this like figure who has a presence in all of these worlds and is potentially like, I mean, maybe is good, maybe is bad, but at the very least is like, his whole deal is above what is happening specifically here. Alan just happens to be also playing with Alan. Saga is also getting roped into this. And it seems to me more like his role is to set up the fact that like, oh, he may in fact be the catalyst, the door, quote unquote, to opening up the rest of what's going on here. That is my read on him. Like, I didn't get to the end and be like, man, like Mr. Door is, you know, he's like has something to do with the dark presence, whatever. I really don't. I feel like his whole role is completely disconnected from the main story that's happening in Alan Wake. I feel like he has a part there. I feel like his and Tim Breaker's whole investigation of him are like a completely different story that just happens to be overlapping with Alan's.
No, I think Mr. Door is going to be, he's probably the most confusing of all the characters, just because I think everyone else, we kind of know what's going on. But with him, it's, he has bigger fish to fry, it feels like, but it feels like the fish he has to fry during this specific point in time or not time or whatever's going on is Alan. He's punking Alan the whole time, but it's intentional. He's like, I have to delay him. I have to make him think. He needs to be better, effectively, is what Mr. Dorr is pushing. He does seem like a neutral to maybe like evil aligning entity. And I think Auntie, the janitor, is maybe the reverse of that, the neutral to positive siding alignment. Because wherever, specifically, Auntie shows up a couple of times for Saga, but really he's predominant in Alan's sequences. Yeah. And it's always after you've talked to Mr. Dorr. It's always after you've been in his presence. Auntie's he's there to clean up a bit as the janitor. And so it feels like they are two sides of the same coin. If maybe not, Breaker is just a young Auntie who just hasn't gotten there yet. But they are, those three will continue to show up in later games. And whether that's Control 2, where Auntie is very present, maybe Mr. Dorr will show up. I think Tim Breaker will show up. I think that will be a ongoing like trifecta of presence in a similar area. But yeah, I feel very confident he is Saga's father. A lot of it lines up. I find him just a very compelling villain. He's not really a villain, but I mean, he's clearly up to things throughout the game. And I'm excited to see what they do with that character, with that narrative going forward. Was there things that didn't work for you in the game? Anything that like really stood out?
Yeah, I mean, I'm trying to think. Like,
there's really only one thing for me. If you need time.
Go ahead.
But,
no, yeah.
I thought the ending sequences, so I think story-wise, everything lands. I think ending gameplay, they toss on a little too much combat right at the tail end. Like, you've had the big fight, Dark Ocean summoning. You have defeated Scratch. Also in that, after Thomas Zane's film, during that, there's some beefy combat sequences. And then after that, you take control of Alan and you work your way back up to the car. And I was like, okay, why am I fighting Taken here? I feel like we're past that point in the game. This feels more like Battle of Wills territories where we're approaching. And similar with Saga, because at the end of the game, Saga gets tossed in the dark place. Also, just random. Tor and Odin also go into the dark place at that time. And I think that's when they are performing Herald of Darkness and that they're effectively trapped in that. But that's just for later. But Saga's in the dark place. And it's this shallow version of the dark place. Because I think for her, time is very straightforward while she's there. And it felt devoid of the dark presence while she's there. Because it's just like this gray films over it. There's no shadows. There isn't really anything going on. It's just kind of bland.
Yeah.
And I thought early on the direction was, oh, well, the dark presence has escaped. Scratch is gone. This is how it is without him here. And then right at the tail end, they toss in a ton of enemies for you to fight. You don't really have a lot of equipment or anything. And it just felt really tapped on, again, after you have just done effectively a very strong battle of wills with Saga in of herself. And that was really the only thing that didn't work for me. Because I was like, oh, this is just like us slowly reaching the very end sequence. And I just didn't like it. And I was like, this feels tacked on for the sake of having just a little bit of like action at this point. That's just, of everything, that was it. Maybe too many fuse boxes, but not really a big thing. They might have run that gimmick a little, maybe one too many times, but it didn't feel bad, if that ever made sense. It's like, this checks out. The dark presence is constantly trying to like dissuade you, stop you, make it difficult for you. So this is their mechanic for how that's working. It's effectively like The Last of Us Part 2 generators, that kind of a thing, or trying to find the key in Resident Evil 4. This is just that version of it.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's really it for me. Again, I think everything landed for me.
Yeah. I think really the only thing, and it wasn't really a thing that like actively detracted me or like took me out of the experience, but I think something I wish would have been a little bit better fleshed out were like Saga's mind palace things. I think just the fact that like, because it is a thing where like Alan's setup for things like upgrading seems very like, you know,
I liked it a lot.
You find it, you're kind of like you're sussing it out, and going into like Sagas and just kind of like spending these paper points to get like a random thing.
Like that
felt weird. And then you have the board, which is very like convoluted and very complex, and I think like kind of presents this narrative very like it gives you the idea very early on. It's like, oh man, I'm gonna be solving a murder. Look at like I got a file cabinet and I got all these like pictures that I'm putting up and all these lines I'm connecting. And it's like, no, there's not really a whole lot of that. It really is just kind of, it almost borderline kind of feels like busy work in a way, because you are just kind of like connecting these threads as it's telling you. There's a little bit of figuring out. But by and large, like that's kind of how I read it. And it's not it's not meant to be like, again, it wasn't a thing where I was like, man, this is really just dumb. Like, because even the stuff where, because I know that there was a criticism, and I think we talked about it in like the main episode of like, you know, Saga going in and she's having these interrogations and she's just kind of like coming to these conclusions. She's having these revelations. She's effectively like popping into her mind, like Casey's standing there and be like, what are we gonna do? And she's like, I don't know. And then she just kind of like goes vacant for a second. And she's like, wait a second, he's in the bakery. And like, it, you know, this kind of like this level of disconnection there. But I think it is a thing, like, it's, even though I would love a little bit more of like the actual threads, that didn't really bother me all that much, because I did see, I, with Saga's whole deal, I did see like the idea of, okay, I get that she would be able to kind of like really bring herself in and really like mold this stuff over to have. And I guess also being like a creative person myself, I'm like, yeah, sometimes I do feel like I go from like not having the answer to being able to just sit back for a second and then all of a sudden really just clicking in and feeling like everything came to me all at once. I think the real thing that did just kind of bother me was like, man, I don't really see the point of this whole like investigation board. Like, you know, the interrogations, sure. The investigation board, I was like, I don't know what's happening here. I don't know why we're doing this.
I think for me, it felt like them just expounding on the narrative that was happening just to give you a bit more like concrete of like, oh, this is what's happening. But I would say I thought it was very neat early and kind of got weaker, while Alan's plot board, I think, continued to stay very interesting. I didn't like the lunchbox, like paper things, and I think I just ignored them and worked fine. I never really had an issue feeling like I was underpowered with my weapons, and so I just ignored them. I did find the words of power very interesting, and I think that was just something where we describe Saga's story as pretty straightforward and Alan's is very convoluted. I feel like with Alan's, they felt that they could get really, really weird with it. And with Saga's, it was like they had to keep it somewhat grounded, and then they felt like it probably needed to be just a little gamey, so they've added this like collectible thing to upgrade, and it didn't I had no problems with it, but I understand like why it maybe felt a little underwhelming for you. Sorry, where's my brain at right now? Oh, sorry. I was thinking about this. What? And so during Alan's sequence, like we knew the story, but his gameplay is him discovering murder sites because he needs he needs to find these murder sites. That way he can speak the saga and get closer to getting out of the dark place. And there's the cult of the tree, which is who Saga's investigating.
Yeah.
Then there's the cult of the word, who Alan kind of acts as a pseudo detective trying to hunt them down. But sorry, I still have a cough. Alex Casey is working against him, with him during all of this. Well, I think that was one thing I left a little confused by. What was the cult's purpose / Alex Casey's purpose during Alan's gameplay sequences? Was it a product of Alan's own writing was getting him there within him / Scratch writing return? Or was it the dark presence / Mr. Door really punking him? I don't feel like we ever got a straight answer on what their Casey and the cult's purpose was, other than to lead Alan along. And I just wanted to get your thoughts on it, because I really don't know.
I think it is one of those things that's a little, one of the elements of the story that's a little harder to parse, in that, in my head, I read, the cult of the word being effectively kind of like a dark mirror of what's happening in the world, almost kind of a perverse torturing of Alan. Because it is this thing where it's like the cult of the word is played up to be this Alan is their savior. He's the one that inspired this. And I think there's this whole idea, especially as you're playing the game and you're watching the Cult of the Tree, there's this idea kind of coming out where it's it's this cult is terrible and they're comparing it to this cult who Alan is in charge of. And I think that there is a realness to it. And there is an actual, I think it's possible that there is Alan is kind of writing some of these things into events or into reality as a way of escaping, or that Scratch is doing that and he's having this kind of effect and some of these things are starting to bleed. But I think to some extent it almost kind of just a lot of it kind of felt like an echo. Here's the stuff that's happening in the world, here is real stuff that's going on, and here are these characters, here's a version of that that's bleeding over into Alan's world that's effectively blaming him for it. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Even as I'm saying that, it doesn't really sound right.
Did we ever confirm in the game if the New York murders that are hinted at actually happened, or is this just Alan's creation of it?
I think it's the creation. As I was kind of talking through it, I think it also does kind of make sense potentially that this is Alan or Mr. Scratch writing these things, some of these things into reality. And that they're also being an element of, because the cult is it's a cult who are doing terrible thing. Terrible, quote unquote. They're killing people, but they're killing people who are already taken as a way to kind of purge that. It's not like they're just killing random people. They're killing people that are already dead. So they're zombie hunters, mm-hmm. effectively.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, so there's this, like, their entire story kind of feels like this, like, paradox in a way, and it does kind of feel like it's somewhat representative of Scratch and Alan's, like, kind of being at war where they're trying to write this novel to, like, Alan's trying to come back, the Dark Presence mm-hmm. is trying to come back, like, how this is starting to bleed over. I think there is the possibility that, like, all of this stuff that's happening in Alan's, like, fictionalized New York is, like, I don't know. I'm trying to make sense of it of myself. And even while I'm saying it, I'm like, man, like, whenever I was playing the game, I felt like I got it to some extent. I was like, oh yeah, Cult of the Tree is real. The Cult of the Word is not. It's mm-hmm. just kind of like an echo point to kind of carry that over and highlight, like, to kind of torture Alan. But as I'm also saying it, I'm like, well, maybe Alan wrote them into existence. Maybe, mm-hmm. like, I don't know. It's a thing. I totally get it.
Well, I think that's also the point, and it's asked multiple times throughout the game for Alan, for Saga, as well as, like, is this fiction? Is this reality? What's real? What's not real? We have to question everything, is often what the game asks. And I think lead us a little to the end here, a question that I always wondered, because throughout Saga's time, it's always like, oh, your daughter died, you moved back to Watery, you move back to Watery, your daughter died, you took leave from the FBI, you came back, this is like when your first case is back, XYZ is like the lie that's being perpetrated kind of throughout the game. But Saga's like, no, my daughter's alive, I just talked to her, I'm still with my husband, nothing's gone wrong, what are all these people on about? And I think a question I was always wondering, like, did her daughter die? Like, mm-hmm. did that actually happen? Because Alan never answers the question of, like, why did you write my daughter dead? Kind of a thing. Yeah. He never once, he always just apologizes, I'm sorry that I've, like, hurt you and your family, but he never acknowledges what's going on there. And multiple times I was asking myself, I'm like, did Alan just write that they lived and, like, give the hero reason to go on to, like, find a purpose? I kept wondering that, and that kind of brings me to, like, the question that Saga and Alex Casey ask at the very end. Saga has killed Alan, quote unquote, and the Dark Presence, and she tries to call her daughter, and Alex asks, is it over? Did we do it? And the phone just rings, it cuts to black, starts showing some credits, it rings one more time at the end, but we never hear it pick up. Did they do it? It's my question. Yep. Like, did they save her daughter, or was her daughter ever able to be saved? I think as we kind of tie a bow on this bonus.
Yeah. I mean, I guess, like, I think her daughter didn't die initially. Yeah. Like, yeah. I mean, I think it would be a very interesting narrative for it to take that approach where it's like, no, she actually did. And, you know, you were written into this reality where you had mm-hmm. a happy life.
Yeah.
I think that would be a really interesting narrative, but I think, like, especially going off of the original Alan Wake, where it was this, Alan was just kind of a casualty of this. Like, mm-hmm. you know, he wasn't this grand, like, prophesized figure. It was just the Dark Presence sought out creatives, and mm-hmm. he was a creative that showed up, and his life was, like, sent to ruin because of that. Mm-hmm. I think Saga obviously, like, has more connections, and I think that it comes down, like, as we were talking about, like, the cult of the tree stuff. One thing that I did gloss over, which may kind of help to to kind of explain it a little bit is there's the section in Alan's chapter about the torchbearers and there being these characters that were like burned alive and there I missed a lot of this, but the torchbearers effectively are like meant to kind of be the precursors to the cult of the tree. They're effectively supposed to be like the ones who know of the Cauldron Lake, and are there as kind of like a secret order, right? To save from it. And so there is like, you know, at least like looking through this, like there is, I mean, potentially evidence that like the cult of the word and the cult of the tree are like both exist, that they aren't like necessarily just an echo, that they are like some of the same thing. And so like, you know, thinking of that, like having Saga obviously has like more connection in that she does have like her own family that are potential, that know of the stuff that's happening. She has like her father, quote unquote, Dor, who has more of a connection to things. And so she's like a little bit more predestined for this story. But I think with so much stuff like being kind of set up to be casualties of this war with the Dark Presence, I don't know that it goes that deep where it is this whole like, you know, creating entire lives and creating entire like alternate realities. I think it does come down to like Saga was pulled in and her life was starting, if not completely unfurled, was starting to be unfurled because of this, her like just her proximity to everything that was going on. We don't know what happens at the end. We don't know if her daughter's alive again, if she ever, like, you know, we don't really get that that answer at the end. So, I mean, it's entirely possible that there is a whole lot more, but no, I say all that to say, like, I do think it's, I do think it was a little bit more cut and dry, more than likely.
I probably so. There was just a few times where I'm with the game of where it's like, question everything. I'm like, I don't, maybe this did happen. That would be really dark. And I mean, it is a horror story. They said they have to keep it dark multiple times. And I was like, yeah, maybe I'm onto something, but I agree. It probably is a bit more cut and dry. I tying the bow, you know, I'm excited for Alan Wake 3. I'm very excited for Control 2 as well. Where I think a lot of these stories are going to pick up. I don't think we'll really get more on, I imagine Remedy will do a similar thing. We'll get Control 2, some DLCs, and we'll get an Alan Wake DLC to lead us into an Alan Wake 3. And I think they'll experiment more, maybe not another Quantum Break, but something along those lines to really just keep the universe expanding and going. I really love the game. I think it's very important. I think it's special. I wish there was a mode where I can just play it again and like cut enemies off just to experience the story and all of that. For people who've been listening, thank you for listening this entire time. I am a big wuss. I hate horror stuff, but I think playing this was like very good and important for me, and you should play it too if you haven't given it the chance yet, because I think talk about what we liked about it, what we didn't like about it, and I like to think we did service to the game, but it is nowhere near the experience of playing it and like just seeing it unfold before your eyes, everything that's going on. So highly encourage you people to go play it. I think we'll look back on 2023 and I think we'll point to Baldur's Gate 3, to Legend of Zelda Tears of the Kingdom, and to Alan Wake 2 as three like juggernauts in terms of what they've done for gaming. In terms of how games will go forward. in their storytelling, gameplay, XYZ.
Yeah, I agree. I am very excited. I feel like there are few developers at this point that like I'm that excited to see like what's next. And I am very excited like for any flaws and whatever, like I'm very excited for Remedy's like future stuff. Whatever comes next. Very, very cool. They're doing some of the best stuff around. Corey, you got anything else?
No, I think I got most of my thoughts out there. I still have like other random theories just running in my head, but we could be here for 3 more hours talking about that. Yeah. I think it's great. Walk, don't run to the dark place, and the journey through the darkness will continue.
Yeah. Yeah. Forever. But only upward, because it is a loop.
It's a spiral. Or
it's not a loop. It's a spiral. Yeah. Corey, this was a blasty blast.
Yeah,
we will do another one of these on something.
Maybe if Final Fantasy Rebirth.
Yeah, honestly, I mean, if not, if we don't work backwards, then Rebirth will likely be it. If not, Yakuza 8. So look forward to it, everybody.
We will have a spoilery, maybe like 15-minute window whenever you play Final Fantasy VII Remake based on its ending.
Yeah.
In maybe a month or two, we're going to talk about that. And that'll be a fun time.
Yeah, it'll be a lot of fun. But until then, Corey, I hope you have a wonderful, wonderful night. What is it now? What did we establish? What is this month?
It's December. It's not the nothingness between November and January. It is a... Yes.
Is it the dark presence?
Made for you? I don't know about that.
Corey, I hope you have a wonderful whatever this is. But until next time, Corey, this has been Arcade Cozy. Life is hectic. Why should your hobbies be too?
Yeah. It's a spiral.